Attack, attack. Chapter 8. The supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. Sun Tzu. Trump. Hillary is weak on immigration. If you listen to Hillary, she is so weak on immigration. We will have a crime wave like you've never seen before. Reporter. Immigration is down. Why is this such a big topic for you now? Trump. Immigration is a very big topic. Take a look at all the crime that is being committed. Reporter. The research says that crime does not match what you are saying. Trump. It depends on whose research. Reporter. The Pew research that says... Trump. Don't be naive. You're a very naive person. As the reporter stammered, Donald taunted. Try getting it out. Try getting it out. I don't know if you're going to put this on television, but you don't even know what you are talking about. Try getting it out. Wow, huh? And before we move on, I want to point out some of the devices in here. Look at how we started. This point repetition will keep coming back to. Hillary is weak on immigration. In the next sentence, she is so weak on immigration. And then notice the power of his frame here, where the reporter was asserting what could be valid frames. He didn't care. He just slammed her frames out of the way. And he did it aggressively, didn't he? And then he finished her off. After the reporter blurted out some facts, Trump disagreed and made his case. Number one, I disagree with it. Number two, whether it's true or not, I'm talking about illegal immigrants, a causing tremendous crime. Tremendous crime. And nobody wants to talk about it. And now Fox is talking about it bigly. The best defense is a great offense. And Trump well offends most people who take him on. Facts on your side means little when you're up against Donald. He'll quite happily beat you down with your facts and then beat you again with his own facts. You see what we're talking about here, by the way? Frame control. This is Donald asserting his dominant frame. And then no matter what position someone else asserts, he just beats that frame out of the way. Now, this isn't his style all the time. It's just one of the ways that he destroys other people's frames and asserts his. An attack from Donald is hard to defend against, as he is combative when he chooses and a covert warrior at other times. When Wolf Blitzer asked him, "Give me one positive thing about President Obama," Donald paused a long while before replying, "It's very hard. That's the only really tough question you've asked me this morning." Direct or subtle, attack is part of Donald's winning playbook. Win-win. Hillary will never take us to the promised land. Hillary will be disastrous as a president. Jeb will be very poor as a president. No energy. Many political pundits have observed Trump's willingness to insult and they keep asking, why is it working so well? Isn't it obvious? Because humans like a good fight, and Donald is masterful at winning them. As he said in an interview in the 80s, "I believe in trashing your enemies and really being loyal to your friends." For a long time, Donald has used this tactic, and he's masterfully using it again in his campaign. Wary of a counterattack, other candidates are mostly unwilling to attack Donald, and waging war on his rivals, for him, is a win-win. For instance, when Trump attacked Carly Fiorina by saying, "Carly did a terrible job of running Hewlett-Packard," he appears to be speaking his mind, all the while destroying her in the process. sparking controversy keeps Donald in the spotlight, and the onus is on Carly to defend her record, which Trump would never do. If she comes up with the goods, she sounds defensive, and if she doesn't, well, he's proven right, isn't he? For Donald, insulting rivals is a win-win, particularly because he happens to be exceptionally good at it. Low energy, Jeb. With Jeb's attitude, we will never be great again. That I can tell you, we will never be great again. Notice here too, how declarative he is. He didn't say, I don't think that Jeb would be a great president. You know, I wonder if Jeb would be the best choice. Right? He says, we will never be great again. Twice. Same with the ideas we covered a moment ago. Hillary will never take us to the promised land. Hillary will be disastrous as a president. You see how declarative it is. There's no room for wiggle there. Jeb will be very poor as a president, no energy. Not low energy, not I wonder whether he has that energy. Like a sledgehammer. Trump doesn't fight the same way others do. He rarely takes on his enemies in the traditional way by, say, arguing policy details or questioning their conservative values. Instead, he destroys his rivals, as he did with Jeb, by slapping labels on them that stick. If there's one thing we now associate with Jeb Bush, it is that he's low energy. Now, whether or not it's even true, the point is that we perceive him this way. Think about this same problem that Howard Schultz had. Out of the gates, he was done. Within weeks, people had labeled him low energy, like Jeb. He was done before he even got started. This linguistic kill shot, as Scott Adams called it, was perfectly placed, as Trump identified a behavior that people then looked for, and the very act of looking for it triggered us into seeing it. By identifying this anchor for us, we began to see Jeb as too low energy for the job. Trump did the same thing, having us question his toughness. Honestly, I think Jeb is a very nice person. He's a very nice person. But we need tough people. We need toughness. In the same way Trump labeled Ben Carson nice, Ted Cruz, Lion Ted, Marco Rubio, Little Marco, and Choke Artist. Which makes me think it goes well with that notion of the full-throated conservative, doesn't it? It isn't just the anchors that stick, but the connotations that come with it. While explaining how his daughter Ivanka likes Hillary, Trump labeled Hillary nice, then added, I don't want a nice, I want a killer. We're tired of the nice people. And with Trump, that's often what we get. Pulling hair. A poll just came out. And I'm tied with Jeb Bush. And I said, oh, that's too bad. How could I be tied with this guy? He's terrible. He's terrible. Hillary Clinton was the worst Secretary of State in the history of our country. The worst. Trump's words cut like a samurai. They said to Marco Rubio, are you having fun? He's sweating like a pig. I never saw a guy sweat like this. The sweat is pouring down. Here's the problem with Rubio. When you sweat that much, now think of it. You have Putin over here, and he's waiting to kill the stupid Americans. And a guy walks in, and he's soaking wet and sweating. This is not exactly a poker player, folks. Sometimes Trump strikes viciously, but often he subtly slips it in, as he did against Rand Paul at the California debate. I never attacked him on his looks, and believe me, there's plenty of subject matter right there. He also took a swipe at Paul's lack of prowess on the golf course. In the New Hampshire debate, immediately after Ted Cruz finished his closing remarks, Donald began his own closing remarks by saying, "That's because you got Ben Carson's votes," alluding to the rumors Cruz's team had spread about Carson dropping out of the race. It only took 2 seconds, but the strike landed squarely. Like a bare-knuckled fighter, nothing is out of bounds for Trump, which is surely troubling to Hillary and Bill. Fight smarter. A good boxer will read the style of an opponent and bait that rival with feints to draw him in for a knockout blow. It's exactly what Trump does. Ahead of the CNN debate on September 16, Trump tossed out some media bait by commenting that he thought Jeb's view on immigration was influenced by his Mexican-born wife. Oh, again, right? Nothing's out of bounds for him. Yet, of course, Jeb bit. When asked about Donald's comments, instead of ignoring the bait and sticking to his messaging, Jeb rambled about being a family man and requested that Trump issue an apology to his wife who was in the audience. This, of course, handed Donald back the microphone, which he used to repeat his own messaging. He did the same to Jeb in the South Carolina debate on February 13, when he attacked his brother's decision to invade Iraq in the wake of September 11. "I could care less about the insults that Donald Trump gives to me. It's blood sport for him. He enjoys it. And I'm glad he's happy about it. But I am sick and tired of him going after my family. My dad is the greatest man alive in my mind." By getting emotional and establishing that Donald was getting under his skin by saying he wasn't, Jeb had already lost. A side note here as well, notice the phrase, "I am sick and tired," which is the worst phrase to use when you're being branded low energy. And you see just in Jeb's framing here, he's already lost. But most importantly, he failed once again to do what Trump would do, use the attack to drive his own messaging. Jeb later took the opportunity to compliment his mother, saying, "Look, I won the lottery when I was born 63 years ago, looked up, and I saw my mom. My mom is the strongest woman I know." Trump responded, "She should be running." Oh! Do you see how he just walked into that one? See, what you can see is that Jeb was just playing this nice guy, saying all the politically correct things that maybe got away with in past elections. But it fails. It's like stepping in the ring with Mike Tyson and complimenting him. "Oh, you look really great today, Mike. Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to a good fight." Boom. Wallop. Bam. If you're going to step in the ring with Donald, folks, you need to be prepared. Great defense. While Donald is a skillful offender, he also plays strong defense. Consider when Trump's rivals went after him for trying to evict a widow from her home, or for using immigrant labor in his business instead of Americans. None of it stuck. Trump didn't legitimize the attacks the way others might have by defending himself, but simply reframed, suggesting that, as a businessman who takes advantage of the law, he is best positioned to shut it down too. Do you see how hard that is? To pin him down? Again, it's the same as this verbal jiu-jitsu, isn't it? That he just reframes it, but specifically back to his own messaging. In the Texas debate on February 25, when Rubio went after Trump for hiring immigrants, he shot back. "No, no, I'm the only one on the stage that's hired people. You haven't hired anybody. And by the way, I've hired tens of thousands of people over at my job. You've hired nobody." You see that repetition again? And we're going to keep coming back to this. When his rivals attack, they only hand Donald the mic, which he uses to redirect back to his messaging. Are you seeing the theme here? It's so simple. His playbook is so obvious. Yet it's highly skilled. And no one else showed up with anywhere near these skills. Here's another example from the Michigan debate. When again Rubio went after Trump on immigration and got one-upped. Sheriff Joe Arpaio endorsed me. And if he endorses you, believe me, you are the strongest. Again, notice that external validation. He's not saying he's the strongest on immigration. He's saying that Sheriff Joe endorsed him, therefore it's obviously he's the strongest. And it's later, Cruz made the same mistake, wasting precious speaking time by continuing the attack on Donald's use of immigrant labor and challenging him to release his off-record comments with the New York Times. In the old political playbook, that might be a savvy move. But again, Trump beat him over the head with it. No, no, you're the liar. You're the lying guy up here. Attack Trump, he turns it back around to strengthen his own position. Flip to the offense. In the Michigan debate, when asked about Mitt Romney's comments, which defined Donald's personal qualities as bullying, greed, showing off, misogyny, and absurd third-grade theatrics. Trump responded, "Well, look, he was a failed candidate. He should have beaten President Obama. Very easy. He failed miserably. And it was an embarrassment to everybody, including the Republican Party." Rarely does Trump legitimize someone else's frame by defending himself from a tough question or accusation. Jeb doesn't really believe I'm unhinged. He said that very simply because he has failed in this campaign. It's been a total disaster. Nobody cares. Frankly, I'm the most solid person up here, and all I want to do is make America great again. Let's just pause on that one, right? Listen to that. So the accusation is he's unhinged. Very quickly, he flips it. He tells the crowd what Jeb really believes. How does he know what Jeb really believes? Right, this so-called mind reading it's called in hypnosis. He's literally speaking on his behalf and in that first sentence blows out the criticism. Then he attacks him. He said that because he's failed in this campaign. Then he attacks him even more. Total disaster. Nobody cares. Then he moves to compliment himself. I'm the most solid person up here. Then he moves to his exit frame. All I want to do is make America great again. Ted Cruz aggressively went after Trump during the Michigan debate for his past support of Hillary Clinton. As a top-notch lawyer, he set up the incriminating evidence and invited Donald to defend himself. Again, Cruz failed to realize he was giving up precious airtime for Donald to repeat his messaging. Donald easily evades loyally questions, and just about every time that Cruz hands Donald the mic, he's the one who ends up getting throttled with it. This time, Trump masterfully chunked up to a high level of abstraction and asserted a dominant frame. Let me tell you something, Ted. The last person that Hillary Clinton wants to face is Donald Trump. That I can tell you. Let's just hit that sentence. Notice how it begins. Let me tell you something. Notice how it ends. That I can tell you. The last person Hillary Clinton wants to face. Okay, says who? Again, it's mind reading, isn't it? He's telling us what Hillary is thinking, even though he has no clue. And he's, of course, referencing himself. But the real tragedy here was the minutes of setup that Cruz wasted trying to expose Trump, only to be left with that final declarative statement, the last person Hillary wants to face. The same old tactics fail against a wizard of influence. Us versus them. In 1987, Trump took out a full-page ad in the New York Times with a headline that read, "There's nothing wrong with America's foreign defense policy that a little backbone can't cure." Donald has been attacking politicians for a very long time. Let's say that Jeb Bush or Hillary, or one of these politicians, his hand flapping them all off, all talk, no action. All controlled by lobbyists and special interests and donors. Total control. What Donald had done here is best captured by the quote from Adolf Hitler. "The leader of genius must have the ability to make different opponents appear as if they belong to one category." Trump has masterfully lumped together all politicians as part of the problem and set up a powerful game of us versus them. "I'm self-funding my campaign. I'm for you. I'm for you," he says. And of course, in this game of Trump's, not only is the problem with them, but Donald is the man who can bring us together. Every once in a while, you have a protester who starts screaming, and I say to myself, "I wonder if I took that person, it's a person, and sat down for a half hour. We're all looking for the same thing. Whether you are liberal, Democrat, conservative, or Republican, we all want what is good for the country. We want to get rid of our debt." Huh? This, by the way, is a powerful device from selling an agreement frame or a yes set. You see what he's doing here? He's setting it up. Making these agreeable statements. "We're all looking for the same thing. We all want what is good for the country." And then he adds his non sequitur. "We want to get rid of our debt." But notice he's speaking on behalf of everybody again. That protester, surely he could bring them on board. "We all want the same thing. We want to get rid of our debt." It's linguistic magic. And he is the wizard at it. Don't bring a knife. The story of David and Goliath, as Malcolm Gladwell tells it, is a story of technology and skill. It is not David who was outmatched against a giant, but Goliath, who was out of his league next to David, who possessed the equivalent of a loaded gun. Trump's rivals are easily bested by him because they haven't adapted their fight plan. Donald is a better fighter with better skills, but that doesn't mean he is impervious to attack. Plenty of times his rivals drew blood, such as in the Michigan debate when Cruz used a very Trump-like tactic, telling Donald, "Breathe, breathe, breathe. You can do it. You can breathe. I know it's hard. I know it's hard." This stole some of Donald's wind, but one barrage isn't enough. Rubio, too, had plenty of heated exchanges and upstaged Donald a number of times in the Texas and Michigan debates, but none of it stuck. "A congressman recently said to me, 'Donald is the leader, so they must attack him to bring him down.' Wrong. To paraphrase Sun Tzu, unless you kill your rivals with your attack, you just keep handing them the microphone to fight you back." Now let's talk three combat points from this chapter, Attack, Attack. This is a hard one, isn't it? You're stepping in the ring with Mike Tyson. How do you take that guy on? Point one, let's come back to Sun Tzu's quote at the start of the chapter. The best way to subdue the enemy without fighting. So how do you get around Donald? How do you avoid him attacking you, or attacking him and then handing him the mic? You must subdue him in other ways. Right, for instance, you know he's going to label you Crooked Hillary. Okay, that's his game. Anyone who tries to play that, like some of them awkwardly did, they fail as well. You're just adding more fuel to his tactics. instead come back to this notion of the vacuum. How little attention can you pay to him? It's like the bully, right? The bully gets more power the more people give them attention. It's like Hitler. Why was Hitler so successful? Because people kept giving him more power and more attention. And if you keep attacking him and you fail to end him, you just keep building him up and building the power of his attacks. So instead, you want to avoid him. You want to stop giving him energy and instead seek out his weakest points. Combat point two, his weakest points are your strengths. Anyone taking him on needs to have as strong a campaign. Right, if your campaign is about beating Donald, you've already failed. What do you stand for? What's your messaging? Why do you offer a better alternative? Particularly when we're looking at 2020, if the economy holds together, that candidate's going to be really challenged. Just to make it through the Democratic primaries, they're going to have to outmaneuver another 24 others. So they're going to be battle-worn. So how are they going to beat Donald? If you're Bruce Lee and you've already fought 40 attackers, you can take on the thug boss. What if you're not? What if you're just regular old, not really good at this? You need it even more, don't you? Tight messaging, a strong campaign, the skills to drive your own campaign instead of getting drawn into an attack with Donald. And that's combat point three, fight smarter. Malcolm Gladwell's ideas from David and Goliath are really powerful, right? To see that this story is told as though David overcame the giant. In fact, he didn't. The giant was the one that was outmatched because David had a technological advantage. He had an advantage of skill. And so if you're stepping up on this stage against Donald, how do you give yourself an advantage? Reading my book and listening to this masterclass, you might determine that you actually can't have an advantage in this way. So in what way can you have an advantage? In what way can you appeal to voters differently? How specifically do you get up on that debate stage and drive a better campaign? How do you fight smarter with Donald? Obviously, if you engage him in the ways we've been talking about, that's going to be a really hard day. So how do you develop a strategy that's built to take on Donald? See, it is like we started at the beginning of this masterclass. The top boxer steps back. They look at their opponent. They get really clear on their fight plan. And then they step in and fight the plan. So what is that better, smarter, faster fight plan to take on Donald? And how good can you get at fighting your plan?